Okay. We are going to get additional messages from the panel discussion. I'm trying to move away from the round table discussion. I'm going to introduce to you the panel, and then I would ask another person to explain to us exactly what we can expect. So join me as we welcome here. From the Bank of Ghana, Madame Clarissa Kudo. Is she here? Let's give her a round of applause as she comes. From MTN Ghana, we have Mr. And once again, is it Eli or Eli? Eli. Thank you. Mr. Eli Hini. Thank you very much. A round of applause as he comes here. From Fidelity Bank, Nana Obin Bretuo. Okay, thank you, Nana Obin Bretuo, as he comes. And from Sunapiaba, Mr. Tony Fosu. Mr. Tony Fosu from Sunapiaba. Okay, thank you very much. And the one that will have the responsibility to facilitate this session will be Madam Pamela Issa. Let's give her a round of applause. So Pamela is going to tell us exactly what we can expect from this session. They have 30 minutes to share insights with us, and then we would have about 15 minutes to join the conversation with them, ask some questions, and getting some responses to our questions. If we have contributions or lessons that we want to share, at least we can hear people coming from other countries to join us. You can share your rich experiences with us after this very session. So I leave this session in your care, Pamela. You have 30 minutes.
Thank you very much. The clock is on. Okay, thank you everyone for joining us today. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank the Ministry of Finance and UNDP for co-hosting this with us, and to recognize that the majority of people in this room are actually not from Ghana. They're part of the UNCDF MicroLead partners. We work with about 40 institutions across Africa and Myanmar. And the goal of MicroLead, which is fully funded by the MasterCard Foundation, so I'd also like to recognize Prabhat from the MasterCard Foundation. The goal and purpose of MicroLead is to reach rural remote populations, particularly women, with financial services, and to join those financial services with financial education so that these people can use the services to their best abilities. Because having access doesn't do anything, it's being able to use and use in a productive manner. So, our workshop this year, this is our third MicroLead workshop, and it's here in Accra, of course. And it's really interesting to be in Ghana, because Ghana is, as we just heard from Buddy from CGAP, Ghana is about to explode when it comes to digital financial services. And so we have two partners that are MicroLead partners, Sunapiaba and Fidelity Bank, and an MNO representative, and also Bank of Ghana. And Bank of Ghana, about 7 months ago, issued some new regulations. And I would like to hear, first of all, from Bank of Ghana what the history was behind developing those regulations and what you hope to achieve.
Good evening. The branchless banking guidelines for 2008 was what was prevailing before the EMI regulations. It was bank-based and bank-led. However, we realized that the envisaged takeoff that we had expected couldn't happen because we found that the regulations were rigid. It didn't allow for a viable agent network. And then the roles and responsibilities of the stakeholders or the players were not clearly spelled out. Inasmuch as we acknowledged that it was supposed to be bank-led, we knew that the real drivers were the MNOs, but they were not getting the room to operate the way they wanted to do. So as we kept talking, it came to a point where we realized that we had to take a look at the regulations again. So 2011, we started a series of engagements with all the stakeholders, the banks, the MNOs, and some payment facilitators, as well as our development partners, particularly CGAP. And we had a series of workshops. With the first draft, we circulated it for comments from the industry. From the series of workshops, we, in December 2015 had wanted to issue the guidelines. However, there was a snag. The banks were not too comfortable with it, so we went back to the drawing table and kept going back and forth. Eventually, come 2015, no, that was December 2014. Come July 2015, the guidelines were passed. And it has been a wonderful journey because for once, Bank of Ghana as a regulator was really engaging the industry. The previous regulation, we didn't really engage them that much. But this time around, we engaged them because we were determined to make sure that we'd pass regulations that would work. And we had made some commitments at the AFI GPF that we're going to create an enabling regulatory environment that would also promote innovation towards achieving 70% of financial inclusiveness. And so the onus was on us to make sure we created that environment to get there. And luckily, Buddy has just said that we're about to take off. And so we think that with the regulatory environment in place, the players should take off. If they don't take off, it is not Bank of Ghana. Thank you.
Could you talk a little bit about the risk-based KYC?
We have introduced a three-tier KYC. We have a minimum, the medium tier, and the enhanced KYC. Depending on your KYC, the due diligence that is done on the customer, you fall in the various tiers. The enhanced KYC type compares to the bank account. But with the minimum, it takes care of the lower end of the market who don't have, for instance, national ID. We have made provision for 5 IDs. We've included the SNIT biometric ID, the NHIS card. We've also included that. And so we have roped in those who would otherwise have turned out by the banks to take off the minimum tier. So that's how basically we have gone around that one.
Okay, thank you. So I think another really interesting aspect of these new regulations is that there's a mandatory pass-through of the interest earned on the e-float accounts to the customers. So customers will be making interest on any money that they hold in their e-wallet. So now I'd like to turn to the two financial service providers. Tony, you can go first, I guess. If you could give us your perspective on how you think the regulations will change the field and how you can or cannot work with MNOs, and what do you see for the future of financial inclusion in Ghana?
Thank you. SNAP Yaba began in 1994 as a financial NGO. And as a financial NGO, we were only concerned with giving credit. We expanded throughout Ghana. In all 10 regions, we have branches, and we concerned ourselves so much with giving of credit. And up through 2013, in 2013, we had the license by Central Bank to be able to take deposit. Until then, we had grown our clientele base to about 120,000 lending clients or credit clients. And you know, in Ghana, when you talk of 120,000, it's quite a number because our population is not like that of Nigeria and in other bigger states in Africa. So it was a huge number and spread across Africa. But we didn't take deposits. We're just doing credits. Our credit system has always been not for the customers to come to our bank, but particularly we go into them, banking to the doorstep, but only credit, or credit only. Now we have deposits, and then we have, because of deposit and the regulation, clients or customers have to come to the bank for withdrawal and things like that. Then we see how cumbersome it is for many of our clients to work from their places. When it was lending, we traveled to the communities, the residential communities, the market-based communities, and we did the disbursement, and we go there also for the loan repayments. But now it is deposit and withdrawal, and under central bank regulation and the, you know, the system, the procedure of processes before accounts are opening, before accounts are open, sorry, before withdrawals are made and things like that. Then it became a little more difficult, contrary to our expectation that when we have opportunity for clients to do savings, it's going to be a boom, it's going to be easy. Many of them are going to open their accounts, push their money in, and can withdraw with ease. But then you see how difficult it is for many of them to walk to the banking halls, far communities, far distances and places, and sometimes it's a little costly for them to even walk from their places to be able to deposit or withdraw. Now, this new regulation gives us an opportunity to venture into agency banking together with some other system that we have done. I'll talk about the SUSU program that we have launched already. I'll talk about the Netbook solution, both of which we have been supported hugely by this program to be able to do. But then, I mean, just for this question, you see that this regulation is going to help us significantly roll out agency banking, reach out to our clients wherever they are, so that it will be easy for them to save, it will be easy for them to access their money through our agency network. So I think it's very good, and it's going to improve the financial inclusion link very much. Thank you.
All right, just to add a little bit to it, I think Fidelity Bank, from where we sit, we see it as a welcome regulation. I think Ali will attest to the fact that when mobile money started in Ghana, Fidelity has always been a very good partner. We appreciate early on, we appreciated the fact that the telcos had to spend a lot in getting this out there. And so Fidelity had always been a credible partner, ensuring that we had, so to speak, our skin in the game. So we actually had a lot of people who were also on the field working with the telcos, especially MTN, to ensure that they were developing their agents and were giving them that kind of liquidity support to grow the market. Now, to the substantive question as to how this new regulation is really going to have an impact for us as a bank, we think it is quite an interesting development that we're going to actually see in the market. Definitely, it is going to really help to have to broaden the financial inclusion space for the country. Let's not forget that every account that the mobile money players are able to bring in should sit in the bank. So definitely, banks are going to enjoy part of that cake. Let me put it that way. So it's a win-win gesture. Once the banks, the telcos are doing what they do best in putting it in trade, the funds will definitely be sitting in the bank. So the banks are also definitely going to have the benefits of that in there. Fidelity, for us, we have been in agent, we have agents out there. We have about 700 actively transacting agents, independent business people who are transacting, accepting, receiving, and giving out funds on behalf of Fidelity Bank. So for us, it's quite an interesting space. It's just opening the market up for a lot more people to get in. We have been in the woods. We've learned quite a lot over the past 2 years since we started, and we believe the learnings is really going to help us even get deeper. On the KYC aspect, where you now have three-tier KYC, we believe it's also something that is going to help us also have a lot more clients. And you realize KYC has always been one of the main deterrent for people to get into the banking system. So we think it's now an opportunity for even banks, if I get it right, to also go even to the bottom of the pyramid clientele to get them in. So I think this is a welcome gesture from our side, at least the way we see it from Fidelity Bank. Thanks.
And Eli from MTN, could you give us your views on where mobile money will go in this market and whether or not you think partnerships with financial institutions is in your future?
Thank you very much. I think a lot has been said around the opportunities that the new regulations provide. But looking beyond and listening to my colleague from SNAP Yaba, a lot of the work that has gone in, especially in terms of engagement and creating of agent locations, has today given us lots of points where customers can interact with the service. And we are talking about tens of thousands. You know, so we are counting larger numbers now. And I expect that that should begin to translate into value for the ecosystem where there are partnerships. Because I'm sure where these agents are today, a lot of these other institutions have not been able to reach there. Because one, the setup costs for these agents are much lower. And so in terms of the numbers that you can have on the ground, you can have a lot of them. So with partnerships like what I mentioned earlier, we could have customers now being able to use their wallets to receive loans. So you don't need to travel to any branch. You sit in your home or where you work, and funds are deposited on your wallet electronically. It's a cheaper means of distributing money and funds. And in the same way, you could also do your repayments because you can set up repayment schedule. And so once money comes into their wallets, the monies are then paid back to the institution. So I think for the opportunities that this brings is enormous. And just the fact that we can digitize money now and be able to reach people wherever they are through the technology, we should be able to aggregate these services and give customers a lot more opportunities in trade. Now, from the telco perspective, we have welcomed this particular guidelines because it's been part of the push from the onset. And I think all the discussions around banks feeling that there is competition, I think most of them has been laid to rest. That in markets where mobile money has thrived, it has rather helped to promote banking. And therefore, we expect that banks should look at it from that perspective and collaborate more with providers so that together we can help to deepen financial inclusion. If for nothing at all, it's very clear from all the things that have been discussed here today that it's cheaper down these routes and it's easier down this route to also get more people on board because we create more accesses for people wherever they find themselves. Coming to think of the number of people who have mobile phones today, if you look at just that number and the fact that we can reach all those people today through this technology, then it means the opportunities are enormous. And the only way we can benefit from that as an industry is where we partner with each other and take advantage of our individual strengths to be able to deepen financial inclusion.
Thank you. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have any examples of partnerships that you have already pursued?
We do have some microfinance institutions today who we have partnered with. We've provided our platform for them, and what they do today is they use our platform to collect mobilized funds from their customers and also use the same platform to give out small loans to their customers. Today, what it means is that whereas in the past, some of them has to invest in a huge number of agents who have to visit customers on a daily basis to be able to mop up whatever contributions they have. Today, that responsibility is now within the technology space. So these customers are set up and they have the ability to visit any agent which is within their easy reach, a minute walk or two, you are at an agent place, you fund your wallet, and then these companies are able to receive their collections of funds from wallet by setting up standard recovery from their wallet, so people can pay. Now, if you move that same discussion back into the facilitating of loans, they are also using the same facility to pay loans to people. So people no more have to walk to the offices. Wherever they find themselves, they disburse the loans and they go to any agent and then they access the funds and do the investments that they need to do. So those partnerships exist. I may not be able to give specific names, but just going straight to the discussion we've had around the VSLAs and CARE and the Fidelity discussion, that's a very clear example of what partnerships can do. We've partnered and we've been able to expand the reach for VSLA engagements beyond what Fidelity can achieve with their agent banking solution, to the fact that because the two platforms are integrated, then customers can also benefit from the advantages that it offers beyond just the single platform that would have been available to the VSLA customers. So that's a typical example of partnership and what partnership can do to this industry.
Thank you so much. Clarissa, what do you see for the future in the financial landscape here in Ghana? You think there'll be new regulations needed, or have you seen changes already because of these regulations?
We did indicate on the onset that the regulations will be reviewed periodically. And when we published this one in July, some issues started coming up, and so we are tabling them. Hopefully, before the end of this year, we would have a review of the current regulations. Then, in terms of deepening the space, we're also looking at interoperability from various angles, because we are not happy with the way they operate in silos. We want a seamless landscape where a customer can do business from any point without necessarily knowing who the operator is at the end of the day. Currently, they are in silos. We want to move beyond that. And I think basically those are the topics we have on our agenda for this year, actually, 2016, yeah.
Okay, great, thank you. I would like to open it up for questions. We have a few minutes. I know we have a few regulators from outside of Ghana in the room, so they may be interested in asking some questions to our representative from Bank of Ghana, or actually the floor is open. Yes.
So the 10 minutes is actually for the panel.
Oh, well.
So they have 15.
Okay. There's no questions. Okay, Prabhat, please. Do we have microphones? Yes.
Thanks for that fantastic panel discussion. I think very, very insightful about the evolution of regulation in Ghana and how it is impacting institutions and the people. One question I would have for Sinapi Abba is that after having undergone this transformation and having got the deposit taking license, what kind of shift or change you have seen in the profile of customers that you serve compared to what you had before 2012?
After the regulation, I talked about the number of clients that we used to have when we were seven only credits. Now we had opportunity in 2013 to take deposits. We really wanted to make sure that with deposit we go down the bottom of the pyramid again, just as we were seven for credit, and even reach much more to the bottom. That is how come we introduce a very traditional system we call the SUSU system. The SUSU system is as old as, the Ghanaian community. I believe it is also known in other parts of Africa in different names. It is a system where individuals, their form of agents, they go around and they pick up monies. And institutions earlier, especially some rural banks and others that attempted to use the mechanism, had serious challenges. But with the support of the MicroLead program, we were able to adapt technology. And again, partnering with MNOs, we're using the POS devices with SIM cards from MTN, and in some areas too from Vodafone. We have our mobile bankers going around. We piloted it for a period, and we really, after we ironed out all the control challenges, implemented it. And in just about 18 to 20 months now, there are over 130,000 subscribers to the SUSU system. The SUSU system lets them or allow poor people, rural communities, market-based communities that would not have wished sometimes to walk even a mile or a kilometer to go deposit their money, but have the agent come to them. Some of them would want to save as low as one cedi a day. And sometimes it's more costly for them to travel by trotro or walk about to go and deposit the one cedi. But with the agents coming around and picking the one cedi, and because of the technology, immediately using POS and having that transaction move swiftly to hit our core banking application back in the office, we have been able to bring in over 130,000 individuals that are saving. And presently, just within this short time, the SUSU balance alone is in excess of 16 million Ghana cedis. That is roughly over 4 million US dollars savings. Many of these, and we analyzed and we saw that between average savers of 1 and 5 cedis a day, more than 75% of these people save that much, between 1 to 5 cedis a day. It shows how deep we are reaching to the people, people who otherwise probably would have spent that one cedi on something else, wouldn't have had opportunity to walk to the bank to save that one cedi a day, now have opportunity for people to come to them. It would have been difficult without maybe that digital services, and with our partnership from the MNO, it would probably have been difficult to have people going around, pick that money, collect it and bring it. The transactions are too small or so small, and the risk would have been so high, but with the POS and the system that we have, I believe it has helped us tremendously. That is just the first step. We have so many things outlined with this program, going down to rolling out real agency banking system to bring so many people into it. I believe it has really deepened our reach down the bottom of the pyramid. Thank you.
More questions? Yes, you in the checkered shirt. Microphone. And could you state your name and where you're from, and if you're directing the question to a specific panelist?
My name is Abednego Dako. I'm from the Ghana Cooperative SUSU Association. So the mention of SUSU just brought the question to me. And I like what you have done as NAPIABA. This year, the SUSU Association is also going digital. And so we are going to be talking about similar milestones and achievements very soon. Now, I want to ask the telcos, please tell me, if we are interested in integrating with your mobile money platform so that our SUSU customers can move money from their SUSU account into mobile wallets or from mobile wallets to SUSU account, are you ready at this point to make those possible? Thank you.
That's a very good question, and I was actually going to touch on that at some point if the opportunity came, with regards to the benefits once again of partnership. Today we have those solutions already, and so customers who have bank accounts, so at this stage we are working with our partner banks who have bank accounts, not for all the banks so far, but some banks have been activated, so you can actually link your regular bank account to your mobile money wallet, such that at times when you have received sufficient money in your mobile money, thank you, sufficient money in your mobile money account, you can actually move that money into your regular bank account and vice versa. When you also need some services to be done on your mobile money wallet, you can actually also get to take money from your bank account onto your mobile money wallet and do that financial transaction all from the comfort of wherever you find yourself.
Can I just ask a question? Is there a fee for that?
For the initial stages of this service, we have introduced it more as an introductory service. So at the moment, there are no fees. But as we go along, definitely to sustain the kind of growth, we will need to introduce some amount of fees to be able to manage it going forward. Then there's also the opportunity for customers to go to the ATM today. And that service is also enabled for some of the banks today. You walk to the ATM and you can withdraw money from your mobile money wallet using the cardless solution. Now, the beauty of this once again comes back to partnership. So for the banks today, if they have been able to invest in ATMs all over, this helps them to sweat that ATM asset even better because there is a revenue stream that comes to them as well. So it's not only their bank customers who are using their ATMs, mobile money customers are also using the ATMs, and we are talking about millions of customers today as compared to the number of bank accounts that we have. So that asset is also getting a lot more value from the point of the bank. So once again, partnership. So back to your question, the solution already exists, and therefore, well, it depends on you. And when you mentioned your interest in digitizing your operations, I was excited. And for me, it's an opportunity to meet you after this program. Okay. So we'll meet you, we'll meet after this, and then we can go through the requirements, and we can get you on board. Thank you.
Please state your name. And
I'm called Grace Majara, working with the CAIA International Access Africa Program. My question goes to Bank of Ghana and probably MTN. We talked about KYC, but I'm looking at the including women and youth, not only as users, but also active participants in terms of agents. We know some of the requirements, registered businesses, the minimum e-float, and all that. Most of the youth we have, none of them have registered businesses. Women, majority don't have businesses. And where it has happened, you find that they are being co-opted either by their husbands, brothers, and at the end of the day, they end up not having decisions. I mean, making decisions in terms of their businesses. So I haven't read the new regulation of Ghana, but I don't know how conducive it is really to support women and youth, not only as users, but also active participants.
I want to believe you're talking about the women and youth as agents of the MNOs. That's a business decision for them. We have created the enabling environment. I know they have a stand. However, in some countries, because we receive people making inquiries all the time, they don't require you to have an existing business. I don't know about our MNOs, so he can talk for himself. Thank you.
Well, I think for us also, we have created opportunity for everyone to participate and taking advantage of the regulations. From the customer point of view, it's clear from the tier categories of customers you can have. The same we have also applied as part of our innovative way of including as many people as would be interested. So for our agent collections as well, we have also defined three different tiers based on the size of business and the setup. And so the requirements also vary accordingly. For the lower tier, we actually are permitting agents who get, I'll use the word approved, or if you have somebody who is already an existing agent, who we know, who has worked with us for some time, he can actually stand in for another agent and give some consent to say that I know this person and I have the full understanding of what the person does. So people can actually stand in for such people. And then we also have an opportunity where within the communities where they want to work, I'm sure there are community leaders who know these people. So we also are able to accept some form of recommendation from community leaders who know these people as individuals, and that also helps us to set those basic or lower level agents, including even in instances where the local imam or a religious leader who is able to vouch for such people within the community. So we go to that level for the lower end agents, and so they will not require business registration necessarily, but a form of identification from somebody within the community who know these people, just also for the sake of ensuring that customers who they'll be interacting with are also secured, because we do not want situations where people just come up and then suddenly overnight we can't find them for one reason or the other. So it's important that whilst we put in measures to bring on board many people, we also put in structures that can help us to manage their participation effectively. I hope I've addressed your question.
Let me just add something little to it. From Fidelity Bank, on our agency banking program, I think that it's actually a much broader discussion where you need to look at entrepreneurship capabilities of our women. Because for instance, we have about 700 actively transacting agents, and just about 27% of them are women. Okay, so for us, we go into the market to look for people who are willing to, number one, invest and also focus on developing the business. But so many times you go there and you realize that it's the men who sort of take the initiative to start businesses and therefore tend to qualify. So I think the discussion should be a little bit, in terms of addressing your question, we need to sort of broaden the scope to reflect how entrepreneurial our women are becoming, and that can also rope them into becoming part of the value chain in terms of the agency banking business in Ghana. That's just to chip in.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Jeremiah Sedu. I work with Jack Sally, a local NGO, and I partner with CARE on the MicroLead project. Two key things: connectivity availability. The telecoms, the majority of the area we work with have no networks. What are we doing about that one? Another critical issue is, I see that when you mount your mask, you put a diesel plant there, you send diesel there every time, they never run out. In these areas that there are no connectivity or there are connectivity issues, we also have power issues. 99% of the areas all the care partners are working have no electricity. Is there a way we can find out, maybe every 100 miles radius or every 100 kilometers radius, find a connectivity solution and a power solution to support some of these things? Otherwise, majority of the people we want to reach, the women, the excluded, and those people, we can't still reach them. Can we look at those key things, and how soon, like my brother's question in networking, power, connectivity issues in the teleco systems?
Okay, I think rightly, when you started a question, you alluded to the difficulty around ensuring that our sites are kept running all the time. We have to invest in diesel and all that. Sometimes even to the extent that it costs us much more than what kind of revenue we may be accruing. And you would also realize that in recent times, the telcos have also gone into tower sharing as part of minimizing the cost so that one telco does not invest in having a tower and others will have to invest in having separate towers in the same environment. So tower sharing is also one of the things that we are doing together to be able to reach those areas. Additionally, there are opportunities to also provide additional support to these communities, but we can't do it all alone. And so for some of these issues, we also need support from other interested parties and stakeholders so that we can work together to be able to provide the services that are required for those who are in those communities. So I think it's an area that we can discuss further, especially in your specific instance, because in other places, what we've had to do is just done some little of boosting to a particular tower, and it will be able to extend beyond where the coverage is. So once we pick up those issues, we engage our network engineers, and then they make some additional boosting solutions onto the existing tower, and then they can expand the radius into those specific communities. So that's also another option that we explore where the need arises. So there are various solutions we can look at, but I think in the specific instance you have raised, it would be good to understand this particular area and the challenge there, and then we will see what kind of solution we can provide. I think that for me would be the way we'll look at it, because obviously, and I'm sure we all understand that it costs a lot of money, and therefore we also look at how we invest this appropriately to ensure we can maximize the effect of our investment. So we will take those specific issues as they come, and whatever support we can provide, we'll provide. Because today, we are doing some work with the COCO communities, trying to enhance coverage within those communities so that we can extend other services to them. And so it's part of what we are working. We're also working with some solar institutions who are providing solar power to farming communities and the likes. And we are looking at ways we can use technology to extend solar power into those communities. So it's also part of the additional work we are doing so that where solar can deliver the service for us, we employ the services of these institutions that are into solar power. And that is already ongoing. And so I believe there's a lot more that can be done, but we are heading there. So maybe we can chat after this just to understand your specific issues. And like I said, once you're able to do it in other communities, you should be able to extend the same support accordingly. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. My name is Divine. I work with IFDC, the two-scale project. And my question goes to Snappy and probably Fidelity. I can imagine the significant impact this platform provided in terms of cost of savings to Snappy, looking at how hectic it is to serve your clients from the regional capitals who are living in the rural areas. And it's going to be significant. Should I be expecting probably next year by this time, when you are presenting, how this will also impact, your cost of credit to these people? Thank you.
Something before my brother comes in. For agency banking, is definitely an avenue to reduce the cost of setting up traditional brick and mortar branches. And for instance, today what we realize is that it costs, I think, around about 200K USD, probably, to set up a fully fledged banking and branch. But when you look at agency, we are looking at less than maybe $700 to get the agent fully set up and start transacting. So we believe definitely it's a way of improving financial access. And once we begin to bring out a whole suite of other services, we're definitely going to have a better return on the investment on that agency channel. So definitely once agency goes out there, it reduces banks' investments in traditional brick and mortar, and that is a lot of cost savings that will improve our bottom line at the end of the day. So basically, yes, we are in alignment with that. Thanks.
And also, you're right, just as you said, it's certainly going to reduce our cost and certainly going to reduce the cost of borrowing. I'm very confident in a year's time, more should come to savings for customers taking a loan. It is very interesting, just as I said earlier, the SUSU program using this digital services has given opportunity for so many people who without or hitherto couldn't have saved that money. Now they have been able to build all these deposits or savings for themselves. We have likewise introduced what we call SUSU for loan, so that these people without any collateral, without the ability probably to have borrowed on their own, now can leverage their SUSU that they have saved through this system, one CD a day and others, can leverage that for a loan, and it's cheaper than without it. So certainly it brings some cost saving. Again, we are going to explore further, just as my brother from MTN said, see how best we can even digitize using money wallets to disburse loans to people and back. I believe it's going to, again, further reduce the cost significantly to these poor clients of ours. So you're very right, we're going to do that.
So the very final question. Yeah, I saw the hand here.
I'm allergic to it. My name is David Bagonlori. I work for Women's Integrated Development Organization, a partner on the MicroLED project, Partnering Care International. My question is the charges, especially the mobile money transfers are taken. Well, if you look at the growth, it could be attributed to the aspect that more poor people are patronizing mobile money now. But in the rural communities, one of the concerns we have is that once you want to deposit money into your mobile money wallet, you have to pay some charge. And if a poor woman wants to send money to the son or daughter outside the community in which she lives, she has to pay money again. So these charges are not making our partners, our clients, attracted to using the mobile money services. And I want to find out if it is possible for us to go back to the way it started, because initially you could pay money into a wallet without it attracting any fee, and then once you start transaction, those deductions are done. That is one question. And secondly, I want to know whether it is now that we are talking about integration and then partnership, is it possible for us to have a partnership where you can do transfer within a common platform, Tigo, MTN, and Vodafone, where you can transfer money on all those channels? Yeah, thank you.
I actually said that was going to be the last question, but if you look at the program, we said we're going to open it to journalists. Fortunately, one has signaled that he has a question, so I want to give him the opportunity to ask the question, and then we'll end this very session. Mr. Ohene Mponsa.
Thank you, sir. My name is Ohene, and I work for United Television in Ghana. My question will go to the panel, but specifically to Madam, who is coming from Bank of Ghana. Actually, we have witnessed presentation from Badu, very interesting one, saying that it will be good for all of us to migrate as it were, to have access, digital access through the mobile money transaction. But the question I'm asking is that taking clue from what has just happened, where people will deposit their monies and the security of it is questionable. Maybe they want to access their money and the institutions, they lodge their monies there, will not be available to give them the money. What the future is when we talk about, you know, getting more access and getting our monies there, and later we want to access it, and they will not be there for us. What is Bank of Ghana doing to make sure that even the rural people who come and save their monies, the monies will still be there for them when they want to access it? Thank you very much.
Okay, so it's about security. All right, so we can take the responses from you, and then
I would give clarifications on the questions you asked, and then my colleague from Vodafone was want to chip in something as well, just to clear that. First of all, the second question which talks about interoperability is what Madame talked about, Clarissa talked about, as part of what we are planning as going forward to be able to further make the platform even more exciting to customers, so that we avoid having to be restricted to MTN, Tigo, Vodafone, and Airtel in respect of service delivery and access to service. So that is a journey, and we've already started a discussion of how we can create that interoperable platform. Now, coming back to the first question, I was smiling when you were talking, because this is not the first forum I've heard this issue come up. Unfortunately, we are getting a lot of poor service from our agents, especially those who are a bit far off from the central points where a lot of activities happen. And that's why we are faced with what you have. In the right structure, when you are putting money on your wallet, there's no fee charged. It's a free service. Over the period, that has been the case. So nothing has changed. And so when I hear people say it has changed, it has not changed. What we have sought to try and manage is the other side of deposit, which is actually not a deposit, but a money transfer. Because of some other issues that it comes with, and there are a number of issues, I'll just touch on two of them. Just to make the discussion short. If I walk to an agent today and I want to put money on my wallet, I put money on my wallet and it's free. Over time, people started adulterating that transaction to now say that if I want to put money, I no more put it on my wallet. I go and instead of putting money on my wallet, I put it on a third-party wallet. And that is also treated as deposit. It's actually not a deposit, it's money transfer. But what we have come to realize is that it was giving us two main issues, and there are several of them. The first one was we're having fraud issues to deal with, and they were coming in huge numbers, because the individual who goes to put money on a third-party wallet does that at an agent point. And then after that transaction, the agent now calls back to the office to say that, yes, there was this transaction that was done to a third-party wallet, but the person who did the transaction has reported a wrong transaction. Listen, a wrong transaction. And therefore, I'm requesting that you reverse that transaction back to my wallet, because the cost is mine. The money came from my wallet to be sent to that individual. The person who did the transaction only gave me cash and has collected his cash back. Now, when you follow that trail and go back to the end, the recipient now tells you, no, that person who sent the money, I was actually expecting the money. That individual who did the transaction is gone. It is now between the recipient and the agent. The agent doesn't know the recipient, and therefore it creates a lot of issues for us. And investigations reveal that those are ways of people using the system to defraud their colleagues. And so to avoid that, if he puts it on his wallet and sends it to that individual, when there is an issue, it's between the sender and the receiver. In that case, we can identify the two individuals from our system and be able to validate the issues. So that's one. Two, because those transactions are also happening between third parties, when there is validation of the account number, which is your wallet number, it becomes a problem. Because one, when you go to that individual and you say, send money to my wallet, which is not yours, if there is any issues with regards to the wrong wallet number being given out, it is not immediately obvious. And because the transactions are instant, if I am standing there and there's any problem with the transactions, I know immediately. But for a third party who is several miles away, he would have to call me to confirm whether the transaction did take place or not. And by the time he has made that conversation, we now realize that it was a wrong transaction. And Ghanaians, unfortunately, most of us cannot be trusted. The individual who knows that that money that came to his wallet was a wrong transaction because he wasn't expecting it. By the time you follow up, he's already spent the money. He's taking the money out and he spent it. Now, you would have to find a way of dealing with that fraud, that wrong transaction. And at some point, we had several thousands of reversal requests we needed to manage. And over time, it was impacting on customer experience because some of the genuine reversals were taking several weeks to resolve because the volumes were many and you needed to do a bit of investigation before you do those transactions. And so that is why we have said that we do not want to encourage third-party deposits. You can put it on your wallet and do your transactions. But for the disguise of money transfer, which is being represented as deposit, that we want to curtail. And that's all we have done. So we haven't changed anything. And of course, when you are doing transactions, there are free transactions and there are transactions that you pay money for. And those are all advertised in the pricing model you find at any agent police. And when you also have been engaged and registered, you are given a handout that spells out your fee structure. So that, if we find agents who are involved, we are actually putting in place disciplinary measures against those agents, and some of them we are terminating the appointments as a result of that bad practice. You are not supposed to charge customers for loading wallet or doing a deposit. And so if there are instances of wrongful charge, let's know. And we've observed that it comes mainly from most of these agents who think that they are so far away, we cannot pick issues that emanate from them. So it is an issue of managing customer behavior, and that's why that enforcement has come. So no customer should pay for putting money on his wallet. It is a free service and it should not be charged. And just before Clarissa comes in and you, on the issue of customer confidence and security, I can assure you that the way this service is designed, there are stakeholders who are involved, including beyond the central bank is also the banks. And remember, we've talked about banks, but we've really not said their key or pivotal role they play. The banks are responsible for managing the liquidity part of all transactions, which means that all the funds which are sitting on customer wallets today electronically, the funds actually are sitting in the bank accounts, which we call float accounts, at the various banks who are involved. So in all the reporting structures we have, which is on a regular basis, at any point in time, our reports that reach Bank of Ghana give that confirmation that at any point, the electronic money that is available on the various platforms is equivalent to the cash that the banks are holding. So that tomorrow or today, if we want to fold up this business, every customer's funds will be made available to him. And so the regulation covers that, and it is strictly monitored. And we also, as part of our responsibility, are supposed to ensure that those reports are validated. And the banks as well must also validate what is available electronically and with them in their accounts. I think that is where the reconciliation and all the other measures are in place to ensure customers don't wake up one fine morning and there's nothing for them.
I think that is reassuring enough, isn't it? Well, so perhaps we are not doing well when it comes to time. We can take some response spanning a minute or two. Oh, Vodafone, yes, sorry, yes. Microphone, please. The microphone will be better.
Thank you. Okay, good evening. So my name is Carl. I think there's really one challenge that the telcos have sometimes when we are working on mobile money, and that is because the people who are supposed to help us educate are the ones who actually confuse them. Okay, so what options do they have now? Currently, people go to a bus station, give money to a driver they don't know, they've never met before, they trust this person, give this person this amount of money, and they are charged, what, 5%, 10%, and then they hope that this money gets to the destination. Now, this is the option that they have, and what we are giving them now is to say, can you put the money on your phone? It has a PIN that you know, you don't have to disclose it. And so that notion of it not being secure, I think it's just a hearsay, okay? So I just want to encourage us, at least for us who are at the front line, we are at a position where we can educate people and say, look, this is the option you have, at least for now, which is a much better option than people having monies under their beds or transferring it in so many other ways that we can't see, we cannot talk about, and we cannot account for. Now, with these figures that were shared, what it means is that $100 million, which should have been under bed somewhere, which should have been transferred in polythene bags, and in, because people travel around with money at this time, in 2016, is now going through this, you know, and that's a lot of money. And I believe that once we're able to educate them, so my journalist friend, now you know. So once we're able to educate them, then we'll be able to get some of these people to actually use these channels. And yes, back to the question on those who charge extra, it's not a doing of the telcos. It's actually some of these agents. So what we are working on now is a registry where we can blacklist some of these agents. So when you are going to put money on your wallet, it's supposed to be free. If we get information on any agent who does that, we blacklist the agent. I know from Vodafone, he knows from MTN, our Tigo colleagues know, our Airtel colleagues know. So we blacklist this person and say, this is not how the service is supposed to run. It's supposed to be for the people who actually need it. And it's supposed to be a very simple and easy service to use. So that's just what I wanted to add.
That's fine. I'm happy to say that the Daily Graphic is also here, so perhaps you can help us with the dissemination of this important information to the public. It's free. I think that is one message we want to. Okay, so we'll take the response from Bank of Ghana, and I think that we'll end it, and we ask Pamela to give her closing remarks.
Okay, I think Ellie did dwell on that better about the security of the funds. All float balances are supposed to be kept in a universal bank. Please note, it's a universal bank, not a savings and loans or a finance house. It's a universal bank. That way, the funds are guaranteed safe. Thank you.
Okay. Pamela.
Okay. Well, that concludes our session this afternoon, and I'd just like to give a big round of applause to our panelists. Thank you so much. And for those of you that are here for the MicroLead workshop, I wanted to point out that the presentation that Buddy was referring to, the Financial Inclusion Insights Report, it is on the D groups, unfortunately not translated in French. But it is available for any of you that want to look at it. Lots of charts, so you don't have to actually know English. And so my summary statements is just that I think it's a really exciting time to be in Ghana. The regulations are really, they're really excellent regulations, probably the best in the continent, possibly in the world. And I think, digital financial services are really going to take off, and let's come back in a year and see that those 7 million customers are all financially included. So thank you. And there are cocktails out by the pool. Please come and celebrate the beginning of the workshop and the end of the panel. Thank you.